The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The S&P notches an all-time high. The Tesla saga is getting weirder. The Fed soothes markets and a few stocks to watch. All this and much more on episode number 576 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Saying goodbye to the summer as we approach the end of August 2018. I'm Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, author of the book entitled The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, which you can grab on audiobook over on Amazon.com. Hope you do that. Some great information there on understanding fundamentals and fundamental analysis and quantitative analysis and going through technical analysis, the quanta funda techna style of what we do here, looking at all three aspects of what makes hopefully a great stock great. Going through the entire procedure of how to find a stock, understanding what's under the hood, looking at the fundamentals, and of course, looking at the technicals when it is appropriate potentially to initiate a buy or sell a stock, or maybe even short a stock. A lot of other good information there as well. So if you have the desire to learn a little bit more, understand what's happening with individual stocks or the markets, or maybe even just technical setups, that is for you. Go over to Amazon and grab that. What do we got today? We got a lot of little things to talk about, a lot of interesting things that happened over the last week, to say the least. I mean, it was a strange week. There's a lot of news flow out there. Not much really necessarily impacted markets in a negative manner, as buyers are pretty jubilant. I'll mention before we get to that, of course, you can go over to Ask Andrew section of thedisciplinedinvestor.com at any time. If you have a question, comment, concern, you can go over there. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button on the top right there. There's a drop down on the navigation bar and just ask away. And if it's a question that's appropriate to answer on the show, well, we'll do that. We'll talk about that and maybe enlighten you and maybe some other listeners that have a similar question. Don't be shy. If you're, I really never ask a question. If you have a question, ask it. Why not? Get in the action. Let's do a rundown of what's going on and what happened last week first, then we'll get into some of the economics. The S&P 500 did advance, moved up about 0.6% this week, which brought it into an all-time high level. And that was the first time that it hit a new all-time record high since January 26th of 2018. It was kind of getting there for a while, rolled down, looked like there was maybe a double or triple top somewhere in there. Real concern every time we get close, it started to roll down and roll over. But this week, all things lined up. The stars of the investment climate and world lined up. And yeah, there you have it. The S&P all-time high again. And that was, by the way, in the face of a lot of geopolitical worries and concerns, trade tensions, expectations for two more rate hikes. Yet, like I said, they really haven't seen to really provide much of a negative backdrop. Nothing seems to provide any concern as investor sentiment is very high. Optimism is up, and a lot of reasons for that. And it pushed stocks higher. The NASDAQ added 1.7%. The Russell 2000 small caps added 1.9%. The Dow Jones climbed about 0.5% for the week, the laggard in the major indices. And some of that could be due to the fact that we still have a lot of tariff overhang, and the companies, particularly in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, probably are more susceptible because of the concentration of only 30 stocks, by the way. But of the stocks that are in there, there are a lot that are more susceptible, I would say, to a lot of the tariff concerns. Now, emerging markets finally got a boost. You've been watching the emerging markets for a while, just absolutely get obliterated this year as a few things lined up and the dollar started to lose value, especially towards the end of the week. We saw that emerging markets really ramped up very nicely. Now, if you look at the chart, it looks just absolutely abysmal. You could take a look at, for example, the symbol EEM, which is an ETF that tracks the emerging markets. Not looking really pretty. However, there is some basing happening and there is the potential for a bounce to the upside. And in fact, one of the things that you have to look at when you look at emerging markets is the valuations. And, you know, how is it looking compared to the rest of the world? How is it looking to the developed markets of the U.S. in terms of valuation? How is it looking in terms of other non-U.S. foreign areas? And one of the big things that really has been holding down both non-U.S. in the developed area and non-U.S. emerging, obviously, is that the dollar has been very strong. And that is really playing a lot of havoc with the currencies outside of the U.S. And as such, when you own funds or you own an ETF that is invested in the emerging markets, as an example, well, you're also investing in those currencies. Or better said, you're investing in the stocks in the local currency usually, because many of these ETFs, definitely the ETFs, don't really hedge it out. Some of the mutual funds do. Some of the managers with the mutual funds will do some currency hedging. But generally speaking, you don't see that with ETFs. So what you're getting is not only the effect of what's going on with the stock markets or the stocks inside of that ETF that is representative of the various indices, this one, you know, being the emerging market index, for example, but you're also getting the implications of a higher dollar, or said a different way, the lower alternative currency that's being traded against. So the local currency is dropping. Well, you're going to see a drop as well. So what happened at the end of the week this week was the dollar started to finally give up some of its upward trajectory. And therefore, emerging markets got a reprieve, both not only in the area of the stock markets themselves, but also due to the fact that their currencies appreciated in dollars. And because you're here in the U.S. investing in an ETF, the benefit of their increasing, the currency increasing against the dollar, helps you with the fund value. But you have to remember that. That's something we've talked about many times, is that when you invest in foreign funds, particularly in ETFs that are unhedged, you're also going to be having the impact of whatever that currency is doing in your portfolio. So just be aware of that, because there's a lot more that goes into investing in international, non-US, than simply the investment of the underlying index. Because you could see, for example, an index move higher over time and be invested in that ETF that specifically targets that index, and their currency is moving lower, and you're like, well, wait a second, how come I'm not making money here? And the reason is that the currency may be hurting you. It also happens with bonds. You may be invested in a foreign bond mutual fund, and some of them are hedged, and some of them are not. Some of them are partially hedged. Some of them are fully hedged. So if you don't want to have any of the underlying risk from currencies, you have to find either a fund or an ETF that hedges back to US dollars. Therefore, you're basically, you have a pure play on the underlying investment when it's hedged. I wouldn't say pure play, almost pure play. Not 100%, but you'll have as close as you can get, rather than having also the currency bet alongside of it. So take a look at emerging markets. I think it's an interesting place right now from a valuation standpoint. And you can buy a basket of them, probably a better way than trying to target one or two different markets. Now, getting back to what went on also last week and what was moving markets. And like I said at the beginning, it was kind of a weird week. We started out with a bid for stocks at the beginning of the week. And then all of a sudden we saw this legal trouble for the politically wise. Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen, just kind of hit the tape, and people were like, oh, futures were down hard after there was a conviction on Paul Manafort and after Michael Cohen seemingly pled guilty and had some kind of plea deal that he did and was seemingly also going to turn on President Trump and give up a lot of secrets. I don't know. I mean, this is very much evolving. We don't know really how this is going to play out and what's going to be pinned on who. And then you have a he said, she said thing going on. So the markets don't seem to care, though. Investors weren't dissuaded saying, oh, this is going to be a problem. I mean, President Trump was on a Fox TV interview saying that if, in fact, he was impeached, the markets are going to crash and everyone is going to be a lot poorer. Or everyone's going to be poor. I think he said everyone will be poor. Maybe, maybe not. But right now, it doesn't appear as if there is too much concern over what's going on here. There was, again, initial concern, futures sold off. A lot of markets around the world were selling off. Markets opened and kind of just pretty much shrugged it off. A little bit downside, but nothing at all significant. I mean, ever so slight downside move on the markets. And I guess the question you have to wonder is, well, why? Some of this seems like it's market moving. You know, some of these headlines do seem, well, enough to really put a crimp in what's been going on. And meanwhile, we see that the S&P 500 hits a high and, you know, NASDAQ is moving up really nicely and the NASDAQ and the Dow, everything. And we have all this news and noise and what's going on. Listen, here's the deal. Investors are clearly focusing on the good news. Okay, that's great. Nothing wrong with that. And you have to identify those times that's happening because, you know, when you have an uptrend in a market and you have a very bullish sentiment, investors are buying every dip. And where bad news hits the tape and it doesn't do anything, whether it's for an individual stock or the index itself, you have to say to yourself, hey, you know what? You got to tread carefully about betting against it. Maybe you want to pull a few dollars off of the table, take some profits and kind of see how things play out a little bit. But the news that we've seen over the last year or so that could have been very detrimental to markets hasn't stuck. The memory of the markets are very short right now because there is a lot of things that are underpinning why this market is going up, why investors have a lot of confidence. Don't forget, we have the extreme benefits of a very significant corporate tax cut that just hit. That's helping companies really do an amazing job at boosting their EPS and the overall earnings and helping them bring a lot more money into their balance sheet and looking for things to do with it, like buybacks. And that is really helping investor sentiment. You kind of have a corporate buyback put on many stocks where companies are committed to returning money to their shareholders through either dividends or share buybacks or both. And that is really beneficial because they're just buying at will. And we're not talking about small numbers. We're talking about billions of dollars being put back into their stock and creating the opportunity for a continual bid on those securities. And if you take that in its totality and look at that from a market standpoint, it's helping markets stay afloat. It's not the only thing, but it's a piece. And when investors see that and recognize that as they have, they say, well, how much risk do I really have here? What's the worst case that's going to happen? We'll see a sell-off. And then the buying programs from many of these companies that are doing buybacks will continue to kick in and hold up the stocks. And there's been no shortage of buyback announcements. Even though buybacks are getting more and more of a bad name as a concern that they are looking to, as companies are looking to do, you know, some financial engineering. And a lot of the benefit that we're seeing to earnings can be attributable to much of the buybacks that have been going on over the last number of years, companies buying back their shares. However, all that rationale and all that logic really doesn't mean much when they continue to do so. Now, if in fact, somehow, some way, someday, they say, oh, we're done. I don't know why, but they're out of money. There's no more money to do this, or we found a better way to do this, and maybe even capital expenditures or increase the pay for employees, you know, some of those things that were supposed to be what occurred due to the, you know, as the effect and the desired impact of the tax cuts was to bring on more employment, pay people more, better salaries, supercharge the economy through consumer spending, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some of that flowed through, but not at the level that was anticipated. And I don't think anybody but the politicians really were pushing for that in terms of their, I mean, everybody wanted that. Of course, everybody wants that. Who doesn't want a higher paycheck? However, I think many of the economists realized that's probably not going to happen. That's not going to be what we really see from this. CAPM, capital expenditures were expected to rise, not so much. Here and there, a little bit, but not so much. So a lot of this is being plowed back into enhancing the shareholder value by just simply buybacks and dividend increases. And again, that's good in a way where you have the wealth effect blossoming. Doesn't necessarily help everybody. It helps the people that are invested in the stock market. It helps the wealthy that have a lot of equity exposure, owners of companies, CEOs, et cetera, the top of management. But the little guy all the way down, the trickle-down effect that was supposed to happen, they're not feeling too many sprinkles right now. Not really getting that impact that was hoped for, but was sold. That's what it was. That's a better way to look at it. Not seeing what was sold from this whole tax package being really brought to their level. But again, we're talking about the stock market. So the stock market is benefiting, and that's really all we need to know right here, right now, putting aside all the hope fors and the morality and the benefits of some people versus the other, the 1%, the 0.1%. Putting all that aside, we're talking about the stock market. That's what we're interested in here. Another podcast, maybe we'll talk about, this really is a terrible thing. But for the stock market, no, it's a good thing. And that's what we're here to discuss, right? So the focus of investors clearly is on all of this, the continuation of the benefits from the corporate tax cuts, the Fed's general slow pace of increase still at a very low rate of interest, and buybacks, all good for liquidity and for the stock market. Now, even some of the news about China trade, there was hope. Remember the week before we saw that 400-point day on the Dow moving up because there was an announcement that there was going to be, quote, low-level meetings between representatives, trade representatives of the United States and China happening on the 21st and 22nd ahead of the implementation of the next $16 billion of goods that will be taxed at 25%, which are those goods that are imported from China, that went into effect midnight on the 23rd. The hope was they'll come out with something and stall this, maybe put it aside for a few weeks. But no, not much came out of that meeting. There was some hope for additional meetings, but again, not much came out of those particular meetings, and the tariffs were implemented on those $16 billion of goods that were brought in as of the 23rd midnight. So even with no change to the trade dispute discussion with China, and even though another $16 billion were targeted, where there's a complaint now from China to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and there's retaliatory tariffs all over the place and from China as well, that didn't seem to bother investors either. Again, going back to what are investors focusing on? Then also during the week, we saw the Fed release the minutes from the July and August meetings, or the meeting. And what that did was, I guess, really, when you look at what was said and you look at the notes and you read the minutes, it helped to really sturdy the belief that it looks like two rate hikes are probably going to be done by the end of the year. So the next one would be at the September meeting, it would seem. And then one probably in December. The minutes talked about a very strong economy. Some inflation, they want to get ahead of things. That was the general consensus of what they were talking about. But a very generally good, positive, upbeat discussion about how strong the economy was in the United States. That was seen as a positive. So again, that was another good piece of information. Now, if you think about it, depending on where you are with the cycle of investment sentiment, that also could have been read as a negative. But no, again, we're in a very positive positive time for what is a very high level of consumer and investor confidence. Even though consumer confidence came off a little bit recently from the University of Michigan, generally speaking, confidence is still very high. And with that, all of this information can be read as the glass is you know, half full, definitely not half empty. Because if we were in a different time, when investor sentiment was negative for some reason, and the Fed came out with a discussion that things were very strong and they were going to continue with their rate hikes, and we saw this implementation of Chinese tariffs against Chinese goods coming into the United States, and all of this political hoo-ha that's going on, you may have seen a market go down 2 or 3% in the week. So it just shows you how important the sentiment is and how things are being read and how markets react. Remember something. It's all about the sentiment of what's going on in terms of how investors view the information that is being presented. Kind of putting on glasses. I'm not saying these are rose-colored glasses. I'm just saying put on glasses. These glasses right now with investors are set to, hey, look at the good, ignore the bad. That's where we are in the cycle right now. Keep your mind on that as you're making investments. It's better off at this exact moment right now to buy dips, to buy stocks that have fallen down a bit, that are basing out, that are buying, and to buy breakouts and to continuation with growth versus short stocks, sell the top and sell on the way down. It's just where we are in the cycle. Essentially, if you think about it just for a minute, it's the opposite of a negative feedback loop. We're in a positive feedback loop. In a negative feedback loop, what happens is that the continuation of negative stories and negative sentiment and negative overall outlook just keeps on roiling markets and keeps on going through the process, and people get nervous, and the nervousness breeds more concern. That concern gets exacerbated, and you get this negative feedback loop that continues and then causes a real significant amount of damage when it comes to markets and stocks. Well, we're in essentially the opposite of that. We're in a positive feedback loop period where everything that is positive is amplified and everything that is negative is muted. So if you consider that for where we are, I think it's a real good picture of how markets are reacting. Why? And if you're looking for the answer of why are markets reacting this way, just say to yourself, we're in a positive feedback loop where information is seen a lot better maybe than what the reality is. But that's okay. You know, again, recognize that and you can play the game appropriately. What else do we got? Let me just finish up the week. On Friday, Fed Chairman Powell gave a speech at the Kansas City Fed's annual economic symposium in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And he said that gradual rate hikes remain appropriate. Now, he also expressed a lot of confidence in the economy, and he didn't see any signs of inflation getting out of hand. And that really, again, cemented the idea that the Fed is going to move. They'll move very gradually. Since there is no inflation and they haven't really discussed inflation at the top level of the Fed, then, you know, maybe it's not so much of a problem worrying about them going too fast and really jacking up rates too quickly. So summing this all up, the bulls are squarely in control. And they're very comfortable, by the way. Got this positive feedback loop going on. Nothing is phasing them at this point, which can be seen as a positive, but also some reason to probably stay on your toes here. The other thing last week that was just fascinating was the whole Tesla saga. And it ended the week on another really weird note. Just scratch your head and say, what is going on here? Late Friday night, Elon Musk, he tweets that the company is going to remain public at this point. And this is after, just a couple of days before, there was news that the company hired Morgan Stanley to consult regarding a go private deal. And how do you hire a company supposedly for working on this? And supposedly Goldman Sachs also was hired to do something about this and to do some work on it. Is that really why they were hired? Well, they were, but by the way, a little bit of a maybe weird. Maybe these companies were actually hired to do some kind of capital raise. That's what I'm thinking. Under the guise that they were doing this go private deal, because they didn't want to talk about a capital raise because Elon Musk has sworn that there's no need to have any capital brought into the company for the foreseeable future and that they will be cash flow positive the next couple of quarters. How weird is this? I mean, a day after you hire a major broker to consult on this, you say, oh, at 8:30 in the evening on a Friday night. No, I think it was later than that. I think it was 11:30 in the evening. 11:30 Eastern time. Oh, it was late. Let's put it that way. You come out with a tweet and you say the company's now going to be remain public. After 2 weeks ago, you tweet that the company's looking, or he wants to go and he's considering a go private deal if it's 420 and funding is secured. And then we see that none of that information really has any meat on the bone. The board scrambles around to cover themselves. Some very thin discussion about Saudi Arabia's investment fund, the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia, coming in with possibly some money. And there was some other issues about maybe, you know, doing some kind of special deal with his rollout and a special tracking stock that the mutual funds and certain investors can hold on to. And then if they go private, and then another tweet about that the 420 was not a specific number. It was just better than 419. He wasn't using any drugs and he wasn't high on any pot. I don't know. There was some weird stuff going on. You have to wonder how long the board is going to allow Elon Musk to continue with these weird late night off hour, you know, tweets. And if we're ever going to see, oh, it was an Ambien tweet, you know, it was an errant. I don't even remember doing that. It's getting strange. The question is going to be, you know, what's going to happen to the stock on Monday after there was this tweet of go private. Okay, let's kind of do the quick timeline. Very, very brief timeline. Go private. Stock goes up 8 or 10%. Gets halted for a while. Reopens up. Starts moving down a little bit. Comes off of, I don't know where it was, 380, give or take. Down to under 300. Pops back up over 300 where there's some further talk about a go private deal and some clarification of a few things. But I shouldn't say clarification. There was some very, very thin discussion of how some of this information could be true. And again, hiring these different companies to come in and consult. And there's too much weirdness here. 2 weeks later, then we come back and after all this hoo-ha with the SEC's getting involved, looking into this, is there stock manipulation? Is there something else going on? Is there fraud being perpetrated here? Lawsuits by investors who are losing money and the shorts that are getting involved? This whole bizarre situation. I've seen this before, by the way. Not in this exact form, but we've seen this before with other CEOs that are so focused on the investors in terms of just trying to pump their stock prices and trying to fend off short sellers that maybe they're doing things that get a little strange. And when there's usually smoke, there's fire. When there's smoke and mirrors going on, it's kind of like that's what we have. It's like, you know, going into this is like there's some smoke, there's some mirror action going on. There's some, you know, look here, don't look over here. Look over there, don't look over here. Doing things like, you know, reaching goals by putting up tents in the car production and possibly causing a good amount of problems with production, quality control. I mean, the whole thing is just way too weird. And with the CEO coming on, looking like at least that at this point, he was just trying to pump the stock up and kill the shorts, which he has publicly talked about so many times. The short squeeze, sending out short shorts to certain managers who are well known for having short positions on the stock as, you know, trying to jab at them after the stocks moved up. Bottom line is the lawyers in the SEC are going to have plenty, plenty to do with this. These shenanigans can't be tolerated. It's a classic pump and dump, what it looks like, or at least a pump. I don't know where the dump comes in with this, but it's a classic pump. And it looks like there's something wrong with it. It just doesn't smell right. It doesn't pass the test. And that's a problem. That's a definite problem. So we're going to see what happens. It could be a very interesting day on Monday where the stock last week hit down to about 280 or so at the low and then popped up over 300. It was pre-market that it went to about 282, I believe it was. And then it popped back up right to about the 300, then came over the 300, started rallying, backed off a little bit with the hope after this Morgan Stanley information was found out. Now we'll find out what happens on the back end when all of this pretty much just caved in. All right, let's take a look at, where are we going now? We could talk about Jackson Hole a little bit more. You know what? Let's talk about the economics coming for next week. We have a few releases that are going to be important, I think, and potentially market moving, even though we have this positive feedback loop going on. But again, the positive feedback loop will stay in effect as long as there is positive things to talk about. You know, once things change. And oftentimes, investor sentiment can change on a dime. But there are some things that are important next week, clearly going to be market moving, and that I think will be seen as a, you know, confirmation of the trend in either direction here. We have consumer confidence coming out on Tuesday. Expectations are for 128 print. That's going to be pretty much a little bit in line with what we saw last. There's some thought that it could drop a little bit like we saw with the University of Michigan recently. We're going to see the Case-Shiller, the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Looking like there's going to be a 6.4% increase on a year-over-year basis on the 20-city index. And that's been pretty consistent. We've seen that housing prices have been moving up. Last week, we saw that the housing numbers were a bit weaker than expected. It could be that mortgage rates are higher, new home prices due to the fact that they had increased pricing due to the input costs associated that were being passed on to consumers and new home buyers. Those dropped off, I think, to about a four-month low. So we'll see what's going to happen with the home price index at this point. But I don't see much of a reason to see a change at this time. On Wednesday, the second estimate of GDP. The first estimate was at 4.1%. Generally speaking, there's going to be consistency with that. Anywhere from 4% to 4.1 is the estimates that we're seeing out there from analysts and the consensus community who are predicting where GDP will be. The Atlanta Fed's GDP now, I think, is up to 4.5% for next quarter. I believe it is. So there's still a lot going on there. Thursday, personal income, personal spending. Expectations are for personal income to increase 0.4% over last month, which would be consistent with the prior month. Personal spending at 0.3%. And one of the things that the Fed looks at is PCE prices, which is personal consumption, consumption expenditure prices, moving up about 0.1%, pretty much what we've seen again. And then on Friday, the Chicago PMI, not much of an impact, but looking at about a 63 print from a 65 last period in the University of Michigan's consumer sentiment, the final print. Last period was 95.3, looking for about 95.4. Usually they seem to increase that a little bit over time as they get their various numbers all lined up from the first initial to the final. Now, just getting back to Friday, the Jackson Hole commentary. It was kind of interesting on Friday morning to see that before the market opened, Steve Leisman over at CNBC had several different Fed officials on to do interviews. And I got to tell you, they seem pretty dovish. I mean, Bullard was, hey, you know what? If we don't do any more increases this year, we're just fine. Generally speaking, there was a dovish tilt, ever so slightly, it seemed, to the Fed speakers during this particular conference. And that, again, helped to relieve some of the upward pressure on the U.S. dollar. Now, Powell's speech was pretty much in line with his recent commentary. But again, he also seemed to have a little bit more dovishness. It just seemed to be there. And that pressed the 2- and 10-year spread, the 2-year treasury and 10-year spread treasury, to its lowest we've seen in many years. In fact, back to 2007. It's at 0.19 spread, the differential between the 2-year and the 10-year. Now, what you have now is what, you know, because this has been historically a pretty good predictor of a recession 6 to 12 months after you see an inversion of the yield curve of the 2 and 10s. However, now a lot of people out there saying, no. This is no longer a good predictor. This is no longer a good predictor of a potential for a recession. You know why? This time is different. This time is different. While this is always pretty much predicted a recession, approximately, again, 6, 12 or so months out after a yield curve inversion, which we haven't seen yet. We're still positive. I mean, slightly positive. And the trend is much lower. The trend is showing that it, you know, the next couple of months, it will go negative if the trend continues at this rate that we're seeing. Just look at a chart. Very simple to see. But this time is different. And that's what we call famous last words. This time is different. Now, how I see it, let me just tell you, we've talked about this before a few times over the last few months, but considering the tightening and the fact that we may see a significant bump in economic activity due to this pull forward effect that I've talked about with the tariffs, where people are buying things ahead of the tariffs, trying to get lower pricing, it's quite possible the way we see it here is that in the first quarter of 2019, it could become very problematic for the economy. If, in fact, we do see the implementation of these tariffs that we just saw and that we have seen, and if, in fact, there is this gigantic pull-forward effect that's going on, the next couple of quarters will probably show a very good and very stable economic growth in the, 3.5% to 4.5% range from a GDP standpoint. However, if in fact a lot of this was due to increased exports because of the pull forward effect, and if in fact there is the extreme amount of consumer optimism right now due to the fact that buying things ahead of all this and stocking up, well, about the first quarter, approximately first quarter, we have to see where the rest of these tariffs get implemented, but approximately from this point here, the first quarter could be very problematic. If the Fed hikes rates 2 more times this year and there is a slowdown hangover from the pull-forward effect of the economic activity, you could really have a really significant drop in GDP in the first quarter, much lower than people are anticipating, because the anticipation right now is pretty much a straight line. 3.5%, 4.5%, let's just call it 4 for the argument here. 4% GDP pretty much for the next 3 or 4 quarters, maybe dropping down to 3.5%. But I got to tell you something, if there is anything that is true about what I'm saying here, and if this theory does play out as I am looking at from what it looks like is going on right now, I think we're all in for a very big surprise in the first quarter. And that will change that whole positive feedback loop very quickly. Then the question, though, is going to be, if we do see a significant slowdown, will the Fed just all of a sudden turn around and stop on a dime? But what would happen if inflation actually kicks in due to pricing increases because of these tariffs? We have a slowdown. Now we got stagflation going on. These are all good questions. Really, these are head scratchers. We have to ponder these and look for these and try to get hints of what's actually going to come in, that will be underneath this entire pile of information that keeps on flowing, because the news flow is just slapping you in the face every single day. The best thing you could probably do is turn off a lot of the areas and try to just look at the numbers, the analysis of those numbers, and make your own determination of really what's going on, because you're going to see a lot of players come out there and really try to, you know, bully the market one way or the other. I'm just trying to keep you updated of what I think could be the case of something that looks like it's playing out pretty clearly at this time, but still needs, this is where I'm hedging a little bit here, still needs a lot more input to give us very good confirmation that this is actually how it's playing out. Until otherwise noted, we'll continue on believing that, hey, you know what? Right now, things are good. The economic backdrop is strong. We're not going to get ahead of what we may think is happening, because we could always change up rather quickly in our investment philosophy, the investment structure, the asset allocations, etc. So why not just, okay, right now, play along with the positive feedback loop on the big picture markets. Obviously, pick the stocks that have the strongest fundamentals, the best trends, etc. But play along with this until something changes. Don't try to get ahead of it. Don't get ahead of it. That's an important lesson, because you can even, you know, if you ever seen the movie The Big Short, now in the end, he was right. And the market collapsed, made a lot of money, but he was way ahead of what was actually going on. Again, he was right, 100%. But the amount of money that he lost during the time of the buildup of this financial crisis and into the housing crisis and the meltdown of the banks and all of this, the amount of money that, I mean, he almost closed down his firm. And then what happened? He was right in the end and it paid off really well. So if you can be patient like that, if it's very hard, if you can be patient, if you want to be on the short side of it, if you want to get ahead of it, okay, that's great. But you have to have a lot of psychological wherewithal to get through all the real negativity in terms of what's happening with markets. Because the fact is that it can go on a lot longer than you anticipate. And it probably has gone a lot longer than most people anticipate or have anticipated. So don't get ahead of it. Finally, I want to just talk about one stock that I'm looking at here. Got to do a little bit more work on this, but I'm looking at Skechers. SKX is the symbol. It's a shoe company. We don't have a position at the time on this, but I'm seeing a great deal of interest that I'm starting to read about and see, actually, you know, kind of here with friends and people I know, and also around on the web with this new stretch knit and comfort line. A few other shoe companies have this also, but it seems that this is a kind of a new comfortable type of, well, it's not new, necessarily new, but it's a comfort line that people are really starting to really get into. Stock's been beaten down lately, but showing some signs of support at this time. And there's a couple of holes in what we call the, in gaps, you may call it, in the chart that could be a very interesting place for a short squeeze if, in fact, that happens. There are, a quick warning, there are some tariffs that are overhanging the stock right now. If the $200 billion of tariffs eventually goes into place, that could, in fact, hurt some of the footwear companies that do business and we import from China. And if there is any retaliatory back and forth, that could be a problem. But I don't know. Just looking at this stock, I think it's really interesting. It's at a place that's pretty low. Again, the fundamentals. This company has a history of having consumer hits and then flops. But if you get that hit, look at the chart historically. Look at a time frame of a day. This look back historically at some of the incredible moves it's made, both on the ups and downs. But when this stock is hitting on all cylinders and there is a real play and people like that particular sneaker and there's a lot of buying activity going on with it, this stock really has the opportunity to move. So check that out. Just do your own research, do your own homework on that and check it out. Other than that, we're going to close it today, end of summer. Spend some time on the beach if you're doing that, at your pool, cooling off, whatever it may take. I want to wish you well. We're going to have a great guest next week, I believe, talking about some of the things that are going on right now in the crypto space, as well as blockchain and how that's being used by companies. We'll talk about that next week and some other things. We're going to have Frank Curzio coming on pretty soon. Ben Hunt is going to be coming on again. And a lot more great guests. I want to thank you for joining me. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out all that's available there, all the different strategies that we have as well. And we'll see you again next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.